From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the state receives a federal waiver to modify some of the provisions of the No Child Left Behind law. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a new poll that finds the governor holding high approval ratings. And the federal government orders New York counties to give back nursing home money. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York has received a federal waiver that will allow the state education department to modify some of the provisions of the Bush-era No Child Left Behind law. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
State education officials say the waiver allows New York more flexibility in evaluating schools and directing extra help and funds to low-performing schools that will now be designated focus districts. To be eligible for the waiver, New York is implementing new college and career readiness standards and a teacher evaluation system. New York State Department of Education Deputy Secretary Ken Slentz.
We know more now about student achievement. We know more about teaching and learning in general than we did perhaps when NCLB was first unveiled. We look at, for example, the use of growth in student achievement. So when we're looking at overall performance as well as student growth, that's a significant change. The flexibility that's being provided under the waiver for school districts in terms of targeting their money for more targeted interventions, particularly for our lowest performing schools, finally being able to identify what are called reward schools, this really codifies the work that these districts are doing for their children.
New York State United Teachers spokesman Carl Korn says the organization was generally supportive of the waiver.
If New York wasn't granted a waiver, just about every school in New York would have been classified as a failing school building. And that probably would have happened over the next 2 years. Clearly, that's not the state of education in New York, and that's why NCLB is considered to be broken. And the waiver application really makes some improvements, and we're pleased that the U.S. Department of Education has granted New York a waiver.
New York State School Boards Association General Counsel Jay Werona says the waiver should give schools more flexibility in fulfilling their obligations under the No Child Left Behind Act.
The provisions of the existing No Child Left Behind Act that school districts around the country are obligated to follow but for securing a waiver really don't allow districts to work towards that goal in a way that is as efficient and effective as we would like to see it be. And so, for example, it allows the state to designate focus districts as they work to improve low-performing schools. It will put money specifically where there's a major problem, and it would allow districts to have greater flexibility to redirect resources to implement what they are referring to as a whole school reform model in the lowest performing 5% of our schools. There is also the ability for the state to identify schools that are in need of improvement in a more flexible way.
Ticonderoga School District Superintendent John C. McDonald describes the No Child Left Behind law as a square peg trying to fit into a round hole.
There are things in the No Child Left Behind legislation that were unrealistic in terms of some of the expectations. And it doesn't take into account that rural schools and urban schools operate differently and large states and small states have different issues. So the waiver gives the states the flexibility to work through those issues as they see it best, as opposed to everybody doing it the same way. And I think that's the important thing. I think the general idea behind No Child Left Behind is sound. It's the process that schools were looking at to try to accomplish it that didn't work in every district or every state. So the waiver gives us the flexibility to tweak things as we see fit.
Eight states, including New York, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, and Rhode Island, were granted waivers on Tuesday in this second round from the U.S. Education Department.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Joining us now is Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Just week after week, Alan, the politics never end.
No, and in New York it's always very interesting because the cast of characters aren't always the brightest.
Well, let's start with the issue of Jay Cope, which has been called Jay Joke, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Some of the people are criticizing it, you know. When they put this thing together, the whole idea was to bring one ethics operation under a single place. They used to have this do-nothing group that was the fox in the hen house, judging the way in which their own behavior, the other foxes, were, and it didn't really work out. I'm sure there was something wrong with that metaphor somewhere, but, of course, they never brought any actions. We never heard from them again. Everybody hates the legislature, of course. So finally, the governor, in a great move, succeeds in bringing them all under one roof and just one commission. But it turns out that the guys on both sides get to make the appointments, or a lot of the appointments. The governor gets to make some of them. And not only that, but the Republicans, the governor's friends, tend to get more appointments as a sort of lifetime thing, even if they go into the minority, because right now in the majority they have the most appointments. But you would think when the Democrats got there, they would. So this really turns out to be Jay Joke. And up to now, nobody has done anything. Now into all of this comes the district attorney, the fighting district attorney of Westchester County. I have to remember to stay out of Westchester County. And who, Janet DeFiore, who it turns out has used her considerable influence to get some special breaks for her housekeeper that would ordinarily not go to her, that she had been turned down for by the government three times. Well, you know, her first thing is to say that a political opponent said it. Well, let me explain something to everybody. When a reporter does a story and somebody gives you good stuff, you don't say, well, is the real reason that the guy is giving it to us because it's his ex-wife? You don't do that. You say, is the material valid? Is it correct? So in this case, nobody's saying it isn't correct. Then it gets even wilder because the 72% popular Andrew Cuomo comes along, the same guy who was district attorney, who was saying, I will fight Medicare and fraud and the rest of it. Now he comes along and says, well, you know, she's my appointment and I'm standing by her and all the rest of it. That's not right. So that's really the whole story on Janet DeFiore and Jay Cope or Jay Joke.
Let's talk about something we don't usually talk about, which is public broadcasting.
Oh, let's.
This program airs on public radio stations across New York State.
Yep.
And, of course, we can't bring you the valuable information without people's support.
Well, look, let there be no mistake about it. Public broadcasting is facing all kinds of challenges. If Mitt Romney wins the presidency, and certainly there are polls that are saying he might do that, the Republicans in the House of Representatives have already voted to defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the way they get the money to the NPR stations. And if you should take them at their word, if they win the presidency, they may well bring the Senate with them. That gives them a Senate, a president, and a House of Representatives. I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm simply saying that's the way it is. And why would anybody believe if they voted not to fund public broadcasting in the past, but only in one house, and then when they have two houses, they won't do it? Wrong. So that's why we have to, wherever we are, spend a lot of time supporting our public radio stations. And I don't care if it's Buffalo or Rochester or, you know, Syracuse, wherever you are, just remember, this ain't free. And it will not be there if we don't step up. Now, the federal government gives a nice chunk of change to many of the stations. There are many people who believe it shouldn't get any money. But we do believe that there are some things that government should be supporting, and public radio and television is one of them. So it is up to you to decide in your own mind, but somebody else is not going to do it for you.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The federal government is ordering New York counties to give back nursing home money. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has decided to retroactively recover intergovernmental transfer, or IGT, funds from several New York counties going back to state fiscal year 2006-2007. The net effect statewide is estimated to be in the neighborhood of $7.2 million. In eastern New York, Albany County tops the list, owing $3.7 million, followed by Westchester at $2.1 million and Ulster $1.5 million. For more than a decade, the cost of running nursing homes, combined with the expensive capital costs needed to keep the facilities up to date, has prompted numerous counties across the state to close their facilities. Mark Levine is deputy director of the New York State Association of Counties.
It appears what's happening now is the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, is seeking recoupment of some of the intergovernmental transfer funds that they provided to counties through the state of New York over the last several years. This stems from an enhanced IGT that came about as a part of the American Recovery Act when the recession really hit. And it was intended to help counties and county nursing homes through this very difficult fiscal time. What happened was the CMS has changed the interpretation of its own regulations and has decided that they need to take back some of the IGT funds that they provided counties over the last 2-3 years.
CMS referred calls for comment to the New York State Department of Health, which did not respond in time for broadcast. Levine says CMS decided the funds need to be recovered in this calendar year. The due date, the end of June. Ulster County Executive Mike Hine.
This is a clear example of a disconnect between the State Department of Health and the federal government. Multiple county nursing homes took important action upon the full recommendation of the State Department of Health, and now the federal government is attempting to retroactively take money from the counties as a result. Obviously, this is unacceptable. I have a meeting scheduled with the Commissioner of Public Health for the state of New York tomorrow. Our county, as well as all the other counties involved in this process, will be keeping all their options open because this cannot stand.
Okay, and according to what I see here, Ulster County is supposed to pay back $1.5 million by the end of June. Is that correct?
Correct. Obviously, that would be a significant hit to a community, but what the worst part of this is actions taken in full accordance with the State Department of Health.
The Office of the Albany County Executive said that because the matter is under legal review, it could not comment. Westchester County officials say they haven't operated any county nursing facilities in quite some time. They are reviewing the CMS information. Mark Levine says many of New York's counties have considered selling their nursing homes or exploring other options to reduce the burden on their taxpayers.
Counties have had a difficult time keeping local programs and services. While they're paying for state mandates, they're funds for local discretionary programs, like a nursing home, has been going down. So counties have been subsidizing their nursing homes for the last 20 years. Some counties subsidize more than others. As a result of this, counties over the last 10 years have begun to look at all local programs and services, and particularly their nursing homes, to determine whether or not they should stay in the long-term health business. The tax cap of last year has made it even more difficult. So we have the recession and the property tax cap. There is not a lot of local discretionary dollars that can be funneled to operating a nursing home.
Levine points out that there are currently a dozen counties across the state currently assessing what to do with their county nursing home.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Governor Andrew Cuomo is attempting to revive New York's iconic I Love New York tourism promotion campaign with some new ads. The governor says the state has not been aggressive enough in its promotion in recent years. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The I Love New York campaign, with its distinctive logo featuring a red heart, was a major advertising and promotional innovation in the 1970s when it was created. In fact, says Governor Cuomo and his top economic development aides, it was too successful, and countless other groups and causes have adapted the now iconic image.
It's actually been borrowed, let's say, not to start a legal war, but it's been borrowed, if not appropriated, by other jurisdictions, and we in some ways lost the very brand that we had created.
Cuomo's Economic Development Department hired an advertising firm to refresh the image. David Lubars with the advertising agency BBDO explains that in place of the heart, the ads will feature sketches solicited from the public depicting a New York vacation spot that they particularly like to visit.
Basically, by asking the public to sketch into that logo what they love about New York State.
The spots feature drawings of Niagara Falls, horse racing at Saratoga, and Finger Lakes wine. In the ads, the pen and ink images dissolve to actual footage of those locations.
Summer in New York State has something different for everyone to love.
The state will spend $5 million on television ads as well as on social media. And members of the public will get to participate, too. There will be a drawing contest to submit more pictures of favorite New York summer vacation spots. Cuomo says tourism promotion in the state has languished in recent years, and he says spending money on the ads as well as other promotions will more aggressively boost what is the state's number three industry.
This is all about jobs, jobs, jobs. It's all about getting dollars and tax revenues in our state. And tourism is big business for the state of New York, period.
Peggy Coleman, president of the New York State Destination Marketing Association, says it's been a long time since the state invested money in tourism.
The tourism industry has been waiting for the state to sponsor a campaign of this size and quality.
Governor Cuomo says he once again plans to take his vacation in New York, but he says he won't be appearing personally in any of the ads. After former Governor George Pataki featured himself in a number of promotions for the state, including TV ads to increase enrollment in government-funded health care for the poor, the legislature banned the practice.
Not that I wouldn't have been a significant attraction.
Sorry.
I believe it would have boosted tourism 40% right there.
The governor was joking, but he may have a reason to think his presence in an ad could boost tourism. A Quinnipiac poll found Cuomo has the highest approval rating of any governor since after the terrorist attacks of 9/11. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In the debate over whether hydraulic fracturing should be allowed in New York State, the need for millions of gallons of water at each well is a major concern. A Canadian company called GasFrac has developed a fracking method that eliminates the need for all that water. But as the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, it's still too early to tell whether it will make a dent in a crowded industry.
During a tour of a drilling site in northeastern Pennsylvania, Cabot Oil and Gas spokesman George Stark describes all the different companies that work on a well.
Right today, on the drilling phase, there are probably upwards of a dozen different companies working here, a dozen different experts in their field, from those doing the drillings to those working with the generators.
Stark says on a typical day, there are more than two dozen workers on site during each 12-hour shift, and that's just during the drilling phase.
All that you see then leaves, because that's just the drilling. The completion and the production all happens when the drill rig goes away.
After the rig is gone, that's when another company comes in to fracture the well. Halliburton and Schlumberger are the two biggest companies that come in at this stage. They use anywhere from 2 to 8 million gallons of water for every well they frack. The water is used to carry the sand and chemicals that help break up shale deposits that contain the natural gas. Now, a company called GasFrack is trying to change that by using propane instead of water. GasFrack officials say switching to propane offers some big advantages. Spokesman Kyle Ward says that, besides propane, there are only four ingredients in the company's fracking fluid, all of which decompose naturally. Not only that, all of the propane comes back out of the well, whereas much of the water stays underground.
So what we're doing is basically, once we're done, there's nothing in the hole except sand. I mean, everything is gone.
Ward says the propane that comes back up out of the well can be easily separated and sold or reused. That would solve one of hydrofracking's biggest problems. In water-based fracking, millions of gallons of water come back out of the well, mixed with salt and naturally occurring radioactive materials and the chemicals used in the fracking fluid.
Propane fracturing would leave most of those naturally occurring constituents back in the shale.
That's Dave Jochsthimer of Penn State's Marcellus Center for Outreach and Research. He says propane offers a solution for the challenge posed by wastewater treatment. But he says the use of propane creates new risks.
You have a large volume of an explosive substance that you're transporting and then handling on site.
In fact, a recent explosion at a gas frack site in Alberta led to a 3-week shutdown in operations while the company reviewed its safety procedures. The company has expanded anyway, fracturing more than 500 wells in 2011. That's a nearly four-fold growth in just 2 years. And this year, the company completed its first wells in Ohio's Utica Shale. GasFrack's Kyle Ward says the technology, which was first used in 2008, should also increase production by 20 to 30% over the life of a well. It's too soon to say whether that's true. The company's expansion after just a couple of years is a sign that the technology is attractive to companies. But Nadia Steinzor of the Oil and Gas Accountability Project says regulators should look closely at propane, also known as LPG fracking, before it spreads.
Every time there's a new technology that could get more gas out of the ground and get it online, it's a lot of people get really excited about it. But just because LPG is new and it's different and it doesn't use water doesn't make it safe.
Steinzor's group and 14 other environmental organizations sent a letter to the Department of Environmental Conservation in April. They're calling on the DEC to perform a separate environmental review of propane-based fracking before allowing it in New York. A deal with a landowners group in the southern tier that would have required drillers to use gas frack has been put on hold since first being reported in March.
That's the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1222. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.